Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Yada Yah Radio and to our Shabbat program. Those in the chat room already know that we are down two tonight. We have the Captain Kirk ready to go another hour or so this evening. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, we understand that Larry has the fevers. I had thought earlier it was a bad back, which is his more prevalent ailment, but he's got a fever. And JB is busted up. I don't know if he's still in the hospital or has come home from the hospital, but either way, he's in a long mend period. He bought a new motor scooter. And either the first or second day on that scooter, he did quite the spill and broke his leg in a couple of places and shattered his shoulder. His arm, I think, is broken in around 14 different places, so it may just be a shattered shoulder. But he's a mess. And, you know, if you've got a busted arm and shoulder and you've got a busted leg, there's not a lot that you can do. You can't maneuver in a wheelchair very well. You can go in circles unless it's a motorized one. And you can't use crutches. And Patty's pregnant, so Patty, his wife, can't help him. So he's in quite a pickle. So our thoughts are with JB, hoping that he has is pain-free and as swift and as full a recovery as possible, and always a bummer when the Larianator is feeling down.
Absolutely.
Kirk, we have an option for this evening. I initially brought up the Yobel, hoping to return to it. But, you know, we have been diligently pursuing Yashaya 28, which was a treatise on the consequence of religion. The Yobel is a treatise on the timing and nature of forgiveness. So I'm game to go whichever direction you would you'd like to go. Where would you prefer?
Well, you said a couple of things that were quite profound, I thought, this morning. At least they were to me. So I hate not to mention those when we got everybody together because everyone didn't get a chance to listen to it. But the first thing was, and then you can elaborate on all these, but the first thing that really struck me was that Yah was saving us from Christianity. You know, in Hosea, what was it, 13, 14? I mean, it's hard to think. Just the juxtaposition of, you know, everything. I want to be saved. Are you saved? And so forth that we hear constantly in Christianity.
Yeah. Let me read that. Let me read Hosea 13 and 14. It begins with this. From the possession of Shaul, I shall redeem them. From the plague of death, I shall deliver them. Where is your plague of death? Where is your destruction, O Shaul? So, it is impossible, as we talked, Kirk, and this came, by the way, from Roy, this passage. Roy did an analysis of every time that Sheol was used to determine when it should properly be rendered Shaul, in other words, Christianity, and when it should be rendered the place of separation, Sheol. And in this particular case, while I had translated it 10 years ago when I did this, when I did Hosea, as Sheol, and, you know, it can be transliterated Sheol, I was wrong. And Roy was nice in his introduction to me. He said, you know, you correctly translated Sheol, but, you know, Shaul is also possible. That was, I think, Roy being nice. No, I misrendered it. Yahweh cannot redeem us from Sheol. That's the place of separation. And Sheol is a place where there is no death.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not being delivered from death if you're in Sheol. But if you're a victim of Pauline Christianity, death is what you want to be saved from. And you can be redeemed from Christianity. You and I are
example. The very thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in this announcement, what Yahweh was saying is that he is capable of, desirous of, saving us from Christianity. And I want to make a couple of things clear. Two statements that lead up to this that affirm that not only is Yahweh doing this and saving us from Christianity, but that the timing is the last days.
Mm-hmm.
He begins here by saying, the lead up to it is, where is your sovereign now to save you and all of your cities, your rulers, of whom you said, give us a sovereign and rulers? Now, Kirk, where did the children of Israel, there's only one example, you've got to make connections, you want to understand. Where did, the one time, where did Israel say, give us a sovereign, give us a king? We want to rule like other countries.
And it's always King Saul when during the time of David.
Right. Yeah, and what was that king's name again?
Shaul.
Oh, yeah. What tribe was he from?
Benjamite.
Mm, yeah. And that was the person that the Israelites chose, isn't it?
And, yeah, they begged for him. They just like,
yeah, and accepted him.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that Yahweh wanted was Dod, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And who was the one that was Torah observant and who wanted to add to and change the Torah?
Well, I would say the changer is Shaul, once again, to just like the future one.
And
Dod
observer?
Is the one that is the affirms everything in the Torah. Mm-hmm. And
do you recall, Yosha making the statement, I have come in my Father's name and you do not accept me?
Mm-hmm.
But you will accept one who comes in his own name?
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you think that relates to King Saul? You accepted him. He came in his own name. But it's, mm-hmm. of course, he's talking about Shaul, but it really ties right back, doesn't it?
Sure.
To the person that they chose. Now, why do you think that Yahweh is doing two things here? He's referencing Ephraim throughout Hosea. Hosea is all about Ephraim's religious behavior and why God divorced himself of it. But here he's referencing, before he condemns Shaul the man, he's referencing Israel's desire to have a political government. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think he did both?
Well,
why change it up here?
Well, they're synonymous.
Yeah. They were, of course, synonymous with the beast that was the Holy Roman Empire,
mm-hmm.
as Imperial Rome merged into the Roman Catholic Church. But with Paul, they were synonymous. What was Paul's most famous letter? What letter is considered Paul's ultimate treatise?
Oh, that's Romans.
Pauline doctrine.
Romans, of course.
Romans. And what's the beast that Yahweh describes as the most menacing beast, the most vicious beast in all of human history?
What is Rome? It's the last of the fifth of the...
And what does Paul say about Rome in the 13th chapter?
He says, God put him there to watch over you, so bow down to him, basically.
Submit to him. Absolutely submit to him. They're there for your good. So is there any possibility that the creator God of the universe who inspired Daniel, saying that Rome was the most vicious of all beasts, inspired the same man that said that God put him there for your benefit and you should submit to them?
Well, that'd be totally ludicrous.
So within Pauline doctrine, what we have is this integration of politics and religion. With King Saul, we have this integration of politics and religion. With mm-hmm. Ephraim, we have the integration of politics and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh is saying, not only am I saving you from Shaul, the plague of death, redeeming you from Christianity, I'm the guy that you ought to, I'm the individual you ought to have turned to rather than relying on your government. Has there ever been a time in all of human history where people have become as dependent on government as they are today?
No, I don't believe they are. No, I don't believe anything could be.
Was there ever a time where a significant percentage of the people were on the dole or received food allowances or received housing allowances or where a percent of a population was a net parasite?
You could isolate maybe a portion of Rome, the city. But no, everybody,
well,
you know, yeah, Rome Empire, everybody worked. Everybody
but
worked.
Even in Rome, the city, let's be clear, in Rome, the city, it was a gravy train for the patricians.
and all the bread and the circuses. You know.
But it wasn't a gravy train for the plebeians, and it most certainly wasn't a gravy train
for the slaves.
For the slaves.
No. So no, this is new ground here.
It is new ground. I mean, the Romans were parasites, to be sure, but they were parasites of all of the surrounding communities. They robbed everyone around them. But in terms of a country choosing rulers, which this is a choice here in Hosea, this is a country that has elected, that has chosen, give us a sovereign, that has chosen a leaders, and chosen his leaders, becoming parasites, expecting to be saved by that country. What is God saying here? He's mocking them.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, you thought that they would save you. You thought that your military provided your freedom. You thought that your government was protecting you. You thought that your entitlement programs, your Social Security and health care was going to care for you. And God is saying, so how's it working out for you?
Yeah.
That's the first thing we
say. Right on the money, isn't it?
That's what you chose. How's it working out for you? And then he mentions labor pains in the 13th verse before he says, he mentions Shaul, Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, twice by name. So yes, I don't think there's any other rational conclusion than Yahweh is not only offering to, he is declaring that he is saving us from Christianity and from politics and patriotism. He's just flat out saying it. I'm redeeming you from it. I'm saving you from the plague of death that's associated with those things. So that's pretty profound. Christianity mm-hmm. claims to be the religion that provides salvation, and God is saying, no, no, no. He's mocking them and saying, no, I'm the one who's going to save you from Christianity. So that's pretty profound. I would agree. Something I had never, I knew that Yahweh, I knew the path that Yahweh had, provided for us to know him, for us to engage in the covenant relationship, for us to receive all of its benefits, one of which is to be saved. Obviously, we've known that. But I've never seen it. Yahweh be so blunt to say, I'm saving you from Christianity.
That's pretty blatant
here. Yeah. But, if you go right back to the covenant, from where was Yahweh saving Abram?
From the very political, the epitome of it, in the form of Babylon, Babel.
Yeah, he was saving Abram, who became Abraham, from Babel, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Leave your country, leave Babel, leave Babylon.
Yeah, this is the country of Nimrod and right. Pulling everything together and the Tigris Euphrates, the great civilization. They designed these things or invented these
when
things.
When Yahweh and Yashaya introduces Hasatan, the adversary by name, as Hillel ben Shakar, what country does Yahweh associate him with?
Always.
He is the leader of what country?
Babylon.
Babel. So there's a connection here. That Babel is directly associated with Satan. When Yahweh talks about Babylon has fallen, and ultimately Babylon falls in the very last days of the tribulation, and he speaks of a whore of Babylon, and in Revelation he equates Babylon with Satan. Is there anything we can learn from the word BBL, Babel? Are there anything that strikes your fancy that maybe is enlightening regarding the Hebrew word Babel? First, what does the word mean?
It means confusion.
Okay. It's chaos. The first time that Yahweh uses the word confusion. You know what it is? There was a tower of?
Tower of Babel, of course.
Right. And the Tower of Babel what did Yahweh say was the purpose? I know what the Babylonians were trying to build a tower to, their gods. What did Yahweh say was he was doing relative to what aspect of human communication, and what did he say that he was going to do with Babel?
Well, he confused all the languages. He used all the languages.
Right. So he said that Babel had something to do with language, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then he said that there was, that he defined it as confusing, confounding language, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we learn a lot. Confusing and confounding language. A place that Satan rules. A place that Yahweh speaks of, a whore of Babylon, which is a woman who is associated with religion, that that the religious are considered adulterous and therefore estranged outside of the marriage covenant, having broken the covenant if they associate with her. And who is the chief god of Babylon?
And Babylon's Baal.
Oh, yeah, the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's why he uses the term Jezebel, and Jezebel, and his open, one of his open letters, which means you're married to Baal, the Lord.
How can there be this many connections, and it takes so long to see it?
Well, the ones that I thought were the most profound are the ones that you and I talked about today. We haven't even gotten those yet. Is there a BBL? BBL, you're the expert in the shapes of the letters. Why don't you tell our covenant family here what BBL means, just based on the letters?
Well, you've got first of all, you've got a bet, which is a family home with an entrance. It's designed where the entrance is from the top. There's one way in, one door, and it's the covenant, and it represents the covenant. You add one more letter, and you get a covenant. The then you have in this one, you have two. You have double bet.
Wait a minute. What? Two
family homes.
How many families are there in Bayeth, the Hebrew word for home and family? How many Bayeth are there in Bayeth?
There's one.
Oh, one. The single most important word in the Torah is Bayreth, which is Bayeth plus the letter Rosh. How many families, homes, Bayeths are there in Bayreth?
One.
One, okay. How many are there in Babel?
I happen to be two in Babel.
Two, okay. How many covenants are there in Yahweh's Torah?
Yes, there's one. Yes.
Okay. How many covenants are there in Christianity?
There's two.
Oh, two. Okay. So if you were to if you open a book called the Bible, you'll find it divided into how many covenants?
Into two.
How many covenants are there in Babel?
There are two in Babel.
There are two. And the Lamed there would mean you're being led into two covenants, wouldn't it?
Two covenants.
So Babel means being led into two covenants. Are you aware of any religion that has two covenants other than Christianity?
I don't think so. Okay.
Isn't the entire basis of Christianity they have a New Testament and an Old Testament, and that comprises their Bible?
Yeah, you have a dead God and a new God.
So is Babel absolutely, unequivocally Christianity being led into two covenants?
You couldn't argue this in a million years.
Okay. The book that Christians carry around that contains their Old and New Testaments.
It's called
being led into two covenants. What is that book called?
It's called the Bible.
It's Bible. Okay. And what are the consonants that make up that word?
I got a feeling there's a couple of B's in that one.
And what was the last letter?
And an L, yes.
Oh, and what are the consonants in Babel?
Two B's and an L.
Oh, they're identical.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure on this.
So Bible is and how many covenants are in the Christian Bible?
We still have two.
Two covenants. And so the book that Yahweh would call confusion, confusing and misleading language, contains two covenants, and it's named after Babel. The Babylon. The whore.
Yeah.
Satan. The Bible is Babel. And Christianity is being led into two covenants, which is Babel. Oh, my.
Oh, my, yes. Isn't
how
amazing.
Did we miss all that for all of that time?
We knew church and church and Babel and Babel and all that. We knew it, but it's just so staring you in the face.
Bible, Babel, and
wow.
The two covenants.
What a connector of dots. That's well done.
Well, you know, it's when it's obvious and been staring you in the face for a decade, and it was only after about 15 years that you figured it out. Something tells me you don't deserve much credit at that point. But that does not diminish the fact that I don't know what our listeners are thinking here. The covenant members, but for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell there was genuine enthusiasm
and making
a connection about what does Yahweh have to say about Christianity. And he defined it for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why would they choose Babel as the name for their book? Why would they say two covenants? I mean, they were
led into scholars covenants. Use these things.
By the way, who led them into two covenants?
Only Paul.
And does Paul speak of two covenants in his initial letter to the Galatians?
Yes, it's a new way.
Yeah, in fact, he introduced his new covenant in Galatians when he said that the covenant memorialized in the Torah, which would be on Mount Sinai, was with Hagar and it enslaves. And so that there was a new covenant is what he says. I think it's in the fourth chapter of Galatians. Is that consistent with Yahweh's Torah testimony?
There's nothing consistent about that with Torah.
No, as a matter of fact, Yahweh said that Hagar was banished.
Hagar
sent her away,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Hagar's son. What did Yahweh say about Abraham's request to have Ishmael be the heir to the covenant?
He said, absolutely not. I don't even discuss it. I mean, he's just one of the times when he absolutely cut him off and said, no further discussion on this matter.
That's right. So Paul is outright lying. When Yahweh explained what Abraham, who was at the time a 90-year-old guy without a child to receive any inheritance, and he was... When he was saying, you know, yeah, I just don't get it. You keep on talking to me that I'm going to inherit this, these wonderful things. And what good is that when I'm 90 years old and I don't have a son? And so when Yahweh wanted to explain what Abraham was going to inherit, did he fixate on the physical world, on slaves and on physical possessions?
Property and sheep? No.
No, he didn't, did he? Where did he take Abraham?
He took him to see what life is all about. And what he
to and to the spiritual realm of heaven, didn't he?
Heaven, right.
Took him to heaven, and he exposed him to what light is all about, because light explains what it means to be a spirit.
Like him.
So how
right.
could that covenant be of the flesh when Yahweh explained it to Abraham so he would understand what he's inherited by taking him to the realm, the spiritual realm of heaven, and the nature of light, which defines what it's like to be a spirit.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. It's ridiculous.
It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
I hate to sound like I'm running out of adjective.
but
my response is...
But isn't this the only rational way to review these this evidence and make these connections?
Yeah, I mean, anybody can jump in and tell us that this ain't so, but I mean, I don't know what your argument could possibly be.
Good luck, I mean.
Good
I mean,
luck, yeah.
Wow. What did, by the way, speaking of two covenants, the Christian would say, well, you know, in Jeremiah 31, he speaks of a new covenant, and the one that's different than the existing one.
Mm-hmm.
Does he really?
But, he tells you what the difference would be and who he's making it with, in the sense that the Torah doesn't change. It's just where do you find the Torah now? You find it in your heart.
Right. Correct.
Well,
the difference between the existing covenant and the reaffirmation of the covenant is the location of the covenant. Is it banished, nailed to a cross? That must be the location, right? No. What does Yahweh do with the covenant with the Torah?
He puts it in our heart and our minds and our being.
Yeah, he integrates it into our very nature, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So how could you have a religion based on nullifying, replacing the Torah with something entirely different if they, when they, and call that a New Testament, when Yahweh says, when I renew my covenant, I'm going to integrate my Torah inside of you?
Well, that, the absurdity of that is it's just ridiculous.
So the only true text of Christianity in the New Testament actually proves that Christianity is wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, since the Christians have a book, the Bible, which is based on Babel. The institution to which they belong, what would they call the institution that they attend and they claim that they belong?
Church.
Do you find the word church anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, Psalms, or even anywhere in the Christian New Testament?
Even if you took it as an organization, he never taught it. There was no such thing.
As a matter of fact, he was speaking Hebrew, which means that if you look at ecclesia, which is the Greek word, used to translate his Hebrew discussion, what does ecclesia mean, and what Hebrew word that was spoken by Yahusha was he actually saying that was translated ecclesia?
Well, the Greek one was, of course, euangelion. It was an outcalled, you're an outcalled assembly meeting, or outcalled.
Ecclesia is the Greek word.
But ecclesia, you look very Greek.
Ecclesia. Euangelion means good message.
Beneficial.
And healing messenger is what euangelion. Mm-hmm. It's from you, meaning good, beneficial, healing, helpful, and angelos, which is messenger. Ecclesia, which is the word that is ignored, and rather than rendered into the Hebrew so that you know what Yahusha was actually saying, it was changed into the German.
Church.
But ecclesia, you can't transliterate ecclesia, church, can you? I mean, ecclesia does not sound anything like church, does it?
I don't know how you get that from there, no. Now, the transliteration is supposed to sound like it.
That's what
at least be close.
Right. Right. Yeah. Not even close. And what Hebrew word is ecclesia translating?
Mikra.
Mikra.
Moed mikra,
Right. Ecclesia means outcalling, to be called out, to be invited. That's what ecclesia means in Greek, from ecclesio and ek, out. So it's to be called out.
Called.
Right, to be called out, to call out, to invite is the is ecclesia. What does mikra mean?
Mikra is to call out, invite, an invitation to join.
Sounds like the same word, doesn't it? So Yahusha, speaking Hebrew, would have used mikra, So Yahusha is establishing his mikra. That's what he said he was doing. And by the way, he was en route to become the Pesach lamb at that very moment. Mm-hmm. So he's establishing his mikra, and Christians have their Jesus establishing a church.
Yes.
So they named their organization after another pagan goddess.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow. Talk about babbled.
Oh, babbled to the absolute max. That is just revolting, really, isn't it?
Yeah, once you see the big picture, you just want to be ill.
Yeah, it is hard to imagine how 2.5 to 3 billion people are deceived by something so obviously wrong.
You know how many PhDs there are? You know how many theologians and PhDs are running around in Christendom? Nobody can pick up a lexicon and a... Give me a break.
Figure it out. Yeah, figure it out.
You think they'd have the passion to want to know.
Yeah, but what did... if we turn back to Isaiah 28, what did he say about those caught up in religion? What did he say about Ephraim?
They're intoxicated. They're drunk with their ideas or whatever.
Yeah, he used two different Hebrew words to speak about intoxication. And if you're inebriated, why is it that they don't want you behind the wheel of a car? If you're drunk, wouldn't you just be more
poor judgment making? Of course, yeah.
Poor judgment and slower reactions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your judgment is impaired. Is judgment important? Paul, after he wrote, don't be concerned about anything. Well, if you're not concerned about anything, then judgment must be meaningless. So why would God be so fixated on warning people about impaired judgment?
He wants you to be. Well, I mean, how can you study something if you're not sober?
Oh, that's true. But
I mean, how do you shamar anything if you're not sober? How do you make a decision on anything if you're not clear-headed? Maybe
how do you make the connection between being led into two covenants and a book of two covenants that it comes by the same name, the Babylon Bible, if your thinking is impaired?
Yeah.
If your reasoning is impaired, if your judgment is impaired.
Mm-hmm.
So what Jonah was saying by speaking of Ephraim and saying they're intoxicated twice, he's saying that the judgment of religious people is impaired. You ever experienced that?
Oh, yeah. I was.
In fact, Larry, who may be listening but can't contribute because he's got the fevers, Larry probably has the most experience among us.
Oh, yeah. He deals with it every day.
Yeah, I'm trying to share Yahweh's testimony with religious Christians, and it almost never resonates, does it? Their judgment is impaired. The Word of God means nothing to them.
Yeah, they just pretty much turn on you, too. I mean, that's the
funny
part about the whole thing.
I shared, and you and I participated in an email from a guy named, called himself True Science.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote and asked, he says, what is your position on the idea that that some aspects of the Torah have been annulled and that the and have been changed? That there's many people that advocate that kind of view. What is your position on that? And what I wrote him back was, why would you ask that question? What did Yeshua say? Didn't he answer that question right there in the Sermon on the Mount, which is the middle of the passages that you were asking? Didn't Yeshua answer that question? And didn't Yahweh provide an answer? Since Yahusha and Yahweh provided an unequivocal answer to that question, why would you ask
what you say? Yeah.
Right. And he just wrote back, well, I was interested in your opinion. Why? A few times that I actually got to answer the way Yahusha answered. When somebody asked him a question that Yahweh had already answered, what did he say?
Thanks, bye.
What, he said, what does the Torah say? Why are you asking me? What does the Torah say? I mean, good grief. I mean, that's why when, Paul had that line that Tim Tebow quoted, and prayer, let your prayers be known to God and your requests be known unto God continuously. Praying and pleading with God, make your requests be known to Him. And you just think about it and say, no. Why not, instead of making a fool of yourself, why not instead actually consider what he had to say? Don't ask a stupid question like, do I have aspects of the Torah been annulled? When Yahusha said, not one letter, not one stroke of any letter, not one yod or tittle. That's the components of Hebrew. And by the way, one of them is the Yod, which is the first letter in his name, which means he can't be Jesus, because he says not one Yod will ever be changed. And by the way, the tittles, the strokes, the letter that is the living embodiment of a tittle, which is the crown on letters, would be the hay. Drawn as as two verticals with that horizontal line like a tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
That That is the very definition of a tittle. And so he's talking about the letters in his name, Yah. It says not one, and the Yod was also not just the small letter, but the smallest letters. You know what the second smallest letter is? In Hebrew, the smallest is the Yod in Yahweh's name. You know what the second smallest is? The only other letter in Yahweh's name that doesn't have a tittle in it.
Yeah, well, it'd be the law.
Well, the tenth peg.
Mm-hmm.
The tenth peg. So those are the yods, and of course, then the tittles are the hays. Not one stroke of any letter, and he's talking specifically about Yahweh's name at this point, but not one will be annulled, be done away with, so long as the heavens and earth exist. And Yahweh made a statement. He said, change the Torah all you want. You can subtract anything from it that doesn't suit your fancy. As you know, as times change, I understand. You've got to change with it, and you should feel empowered to change whatever you want. Take away whatever you'd like. And, of course, you know, I want you to be happy. So add to it. You know, I created you to be creative. So, you know, you just feel free to add to the Torah. Isn't that what he said?
Gamaliel, or whatever his name was, probably would have said something like that, you know, being a rabbi, but I don't think Yahweh would even entertain such conversation around
it. Didn't Yahweh say in the Torah, Torah is complete and perfect, and then he said that do not add anything to it, do not subtract anything from it.
I think that was the preamble to the the end of the statement he gave to Moshe. When he delivered the tablet
of stone. Yeah, do you think that Yahweh's plan of relationship, his means to participate in the covenant, and his means to be perfected and become immortal and enriched and empowered through the Mikra, do you think that his plans are possibly inadequate?
They're the most beautiful plans. You couldn't create something like that.
Do you think that heaven and our eternity with Yahweh is somehow deficient? Do you think, Kurt? I mean, you're an artist, a pretty creative guy. You know, you were able to draw a beautiful picture in Wu Terry. You've got some things going for you. You've got skills. Do you think that if you were to spend all of your efforts trying to enhance Yahweh's testimony, his plan, his offer, that you could do so?
You couldn't come. You didn't know. I mean, come on.
What if I joined your foursome? And you know, the two of us. We got the Larianator. We got JB back in one piece, and we all collectively spent the next decade polishing this lily. Do you think we could add to it, make it better?
We have no hope of coming up with anything as wonderful as this.
No, Yahweh's going to make us as magnificent as He is, but at this point, He is infinitely more magnificent than we are.
No, we're still the slugs.
Oh, man. We're a lot better from his perspective.
Well,
there is no way that we're going to improve what he has created. So why would it be in our interest that all of humanity collectively should feel somehow like they can improve on what God offered?
Well, think for a minute. The Malak are infinitely smarter than us as far as power and what they have. You know, they've been around forever. They've seen everything. They've done everything. They move in a rapid pace.
Uh-huh.
All they can do is twist it. They can't come up with anything creative. I mean,
right.
So, I mean,
yeah, that's not so good.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and, you know, look at all of human
effort.
Accomplishment. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Look at Babylon. Babylon is a powerful civilization. Was Babylon good? Did they leave a positive or a negative mark on humanity?
Well, it was horrible.
How about Egypt?
Same thing. Go to the
Hindustan
anywhere.
Nation that invented crucifixion, the nation that would haul their slaves away with fish hooks in their noses, naked, just to humiliate them.
Hmm. No, go anywhere you want. You find that it's just oppression, oppression, oppression.
Have you read the history of Rome?
Oh, yeah.
you think there's any more despicable civilization in human history, and that's the epitome of human civilizations.
Yeah, I used to have that debate in college when I'd say, well, as horrible as Germany was, go to the Colosseum. I mean, they hot dogs while they watched it.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it was entertaining while they watched
they
people being eaten alive and torn to pieces while they celebrated their pagan gods.
How much
I do not think in all of human history there's been a more depraved, disgusting place than the Roman Colosseum. Really? I mean,
no,
all
it's
all
just a horrible place when you think about it. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So this is the epitome of man's civilization, and look how repulsive it was. Look at how disastrous America is right now.
Hmm.
And we're a superpower. So you put all of man's best together, it's tattered and dirty and repulsive compared to Yahweh. No, there's a reason that God said, don't add anything to it. Don't take anything away from it. He designed us. He created us. He knows what's in our best interest. Kirk, if you were to tell Yahweh, you know, what I think I really need, yeah, is I need a means to go from being mortal to immortal. And I need a means to have you overlook my foul-ups. And I need a means to become part of your family because, you know, I think that'd be pretty cool to be your kid, you know, and inherit everything you have been given. I need a means to be empowered and enriched. I need a means just for you to take care of me in this way so that we can camp out together because that's what I would really like. Do you think you need to go ask God for that? Or if you were to ask him for it, what his response would be?
His response would be, I've already got a plan.
I've already got it. Why didn't you read it?
Yeah.
All right, got it. Why don't you read
my
why
want
would you
to
ask
is greater
something
than your,
that he's already answered?
Yeah. His want for us is greater than our want for him. It's, you know, he wanted this to happen. He wants you to want this to happen.
Yeah.
But you got to read it. You got to see the offer. You got to look at the offer.
You know, if you were to teach your class next Tuesday night,
mm-hmm.
and you began by your class and said, we're going to talk about light and the... and how light is what provides a contrast and color and dimension,
mm-hmm.
and how to recognize the importance of getting the light right in a scene. And then you go into great detail about the importance of light. And after you've spoken for a half an hour, and you've poured your heart out, you've shared everything you know about light, and somebody, Susie Q, in the front of the class, raises her hand, and she says, you know, some people have said that light is important. What do you think?
Well, number one, I do that.
yeah.
And sometime right in the middle of it, because they're paying me to give them stuff they can't find easily at all, and then half of them will walk away. And just I'll just go, okay, well,
okay, so they're not even asking. But my example here is, you know, the Christian prayer.
But then, yeah,
asking
they ask
God
you,
for something, you know, and he's already given you everything. Or
give you all the answers.
Right. Or let's say that, for example, you provide all of these great insights to light and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, well, what about mushrooms? I really like mushrooms. What do you think about mushrooms?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just be flabbergasted?
Oh, yeah.
Why, you know,
and y'all,
y'all's
emotional.
You know,
sure is.
What about that, give me a touchdown? What about that home run? What about that girlfriend? What about the lottery ticket? What about, you know, make my country, protect my family, heal Susie Q? And, you know, it's like saying, what do you think about mushrooms? But I'm having a conversation with you about adopting you into my family, and you're asking me about mushrooms.
Yeah.
Mm. That is where we are, though, isn't it? That's where
I'm
Christianity
is. Yeah, Christianity, absolutely.
So,
I have finally grown to the point that I know the answers are there, and that's where you go, and I don't bother him with the day-to-day stuff. I mean, come on. There's nothing I could ask him that he wouldn't want better for me.
That's not to say we don't communicate, but should our communication be in response to something that we've learned from him, something that he said, something that is beneficial to us, something that is interesting to us? Ought not that be our response? Aren't we, since he is so much smarter and so much more generous and so much more important than we are, shouldn't we begin by at least listening to him and then responding?
Mm-hmm.
No, I've actually finally figured out, slow as we were, the Christian connections with Babel and the Whore of Babylon, and the fact that the Whore of Babylon is defined, really, as Roman Catholicism, that being led into two covenants with a book called the Bible, that I think, to a very large degree, that is communication with Yahweh.
Oh, I totally agree. Totally agree.
I think we listened to what he had to say. We finally closely examined and carefully considered it. We used our Nesama conscience, and we were enlightened in such a way that we could respond, and our response is conversation with Yahweh. He communicated to us the insights we needed. We took the time to consider them, and our response is communication with him.
Well, you know, I think I mentioned to you that the other night, or night last night, when I was translating that section Roy had sent, one of the verses there, and my concern was, and I was, despite Paul's advice, I was quite anxious not to get it right, not to get it wrong, rather. And the point being, the whole reason for doing that was to examine the word Sheol versus Sha'ul. Versus CEO, rather, and I wasn't going there to, wherever the words lead, that's fine. I wasn't going there to say, okay, this is what it means, because I needed to mean that. You know, I just rationally, there was a point there when I thought to myself, well, rationally, you can't come up with any, it has to be him, it cannot be a place. Places, there's a difference between a person and a place of life that's separated and death. I mean, you're just talking about two different animals. It has to be Sheol. It cannot be Sheol as they point it to pronounce it. I mean, it's not the place of separation. And that, to me, was just cool. I mean, I said, wow. You know,
and realistically, Yahweh only speaks about the big things. There is never a reason for him to speak publicly about something that pertains only to Kirk. Now, he said a lot of stuff that pertains to Kirk and to me. A lot of stuff. But not only to you.
It really has to be
a big, big thing for him to speak about something. I mean, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms are long, but, you know, human history is longer. And a lot of people come this way. You know, tens of billions. A lot of religions have been created. But has there ever been a religion that is more Babylonian than the one that's found in the Babel?
No.
Has there ever been a religion that has been more clever as a counterfeit to corrupt Yahweh's testimony to create a myth that is highly credible and enticing because they put the myth right on top of the truth?
Mm-hmm. It's amazing, isn't it?
Has there ever been a religion as popular as Christianity?
Not to my knowledge.
So if Yahweh is going to expose and condemn a plague of death, and all religion is a plague of death, which one is he most likely going to condemn? There's only two candidates, really.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe three.
Well,
one, because it affects his chosen people, would be Judaism. And man, does he have a lot to say about Judaism.
Oh, yeah.
Primarily, after his people, the next big religion that he wants people to know is a plague of death, that there is no satisfaction in, is Christianity, Pauline Christianity. That's why Yosha stood up and said, I came in my father's name, Yahweh, as Yosha, and you did not accept me, but one will come in his own name, a name that he chose, Apollos. And he will accept. Boy, it sure is obvious why Paul changed his name.
Well, but he could have changed it to anything. Why did he change it to lowly and little?
I mean, little, yeah. When Yosef began the Sermon on the Mount by saying anyone who tries to take away from the Torah is going to be called lowly and little.
I mean,
wow.
Wow, yes.
Yeah, that the person who is going to try to annul the Torah, the Torahless one, is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
Who will claim to be what is not. And Paul even threw it in their face, saying, to the Torah observant, I appear to be Torah observant, even though I'm not. To the those who are not Torah observant, of course, I'm not Torah observant. To the Jew, I'm a Jew. And to the Gentile, well, I'm a Gentile. I have all things to all people so that I can win an advantage over them. He admitted it.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no other candidate.
He admits everything. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm insane and I'm demon-possessed. I'm a sexual pervert. I mean, he says all of it. He said the Torah made him a sexual pervert. He wouldn't have been one otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
In the same book for the Romans, he said in the 7th chapter that he equated the Torah to a dead husband. So you're no longer in any way bound to it or influenced by it. Huh.
Well, that's a twisted view of what a woman's role is, too, because he's assuming they're bound to their husband again.
That was his view, that husbands lord over their wives. But, boy, and the Torah, if Terry wanted to part ways with her artist buddy, and in the Torah, all she would have to do is write you a note and say, Kirkster, I'm out of here. And that would be it. No explanation needed.
No. And she would, it changes nothing with her relationship to Yahweh.
No. That's all that would be required. And it'd be gone. Over. Done. Finished. So, did Yahweh ever tell Sarah that you are, in this covenant relationship, you are subservient to your husband?
No, no second fiddles.
No, absolutely not. You know, who is the person who was conceived to represent the set-apart spirit in the life of Yisrael? Whose name is emblazoned in the heart of Yisrael?
Oh, Sarah, of course.
Right.
Wrong.
She's the mother of laughter, the mother of the first child of the covenant.
Yes.
Just as the set apart spirit is our spiritual mother. So,
the heart of the home is still the mother.
Right. Do you think, is there any place where Yahweh diminishes the role of the set apart spirit, our spiritual mother, below the role of the diminished manifestation, the Son? Or is, in fact, the very fact that the Son is the diminished manifestation is Yosha less valuable in this whole thing, than our spiritual mother.
Yeah.
Realistically.
There's no argument there.
So, no matter where you turn, the...
The power that made Yahusha able to do, fulfill Passover now.
Right. Yes. As a matter of fact, when Yosha said, my God, why have you forsaken me? By the way, was he asking a question at that point?
No, he's quoting.
He's quoting a psalm. And so rather than asking a question, he was providing an answer, wasn't he?
Yeah. I believe it was 22.
He was the living embodiment of the answer.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling you, this is the answer. Go read the 22nd psalm.
Yeah.
But what he was also announcing is the set-apart spirit was leaving him so that the body was no longer God.
Right.
I mean, it's all so clear. It's all so beautiful. It's such a marvelous plan. For those who have, who are new to this, or those who may be listening to this, who are not yet a member of the covenant, we have spoken of the fact that Yahweh has a means to make us immortal and to redeem us in the like, and we've talked about the fact that Yahweh has a covenant and a single covenant. But what are the terms and conditions of this covenant, Kirk?
Well, it starts obviously with the first thing you have to do is you have to get away from Babylon. You have to walk away beyond before you can.
What do you have to walk away from? Where was Abraham that Yahweh asked him to walk away?
He said he was in, obviously he was in Ur, which is one of the cities that make up Babylon. So he said, get away from that.
And in Hebrew, it would be
BBL.
Okay. So he asked Abraham to leave the BBL Bible walk over, to disassociate from two covenants,
to
walk
covenants,
away
right.
from confusion, to walk away from the whore of Babylon,
yes.
and the leader of Babylon, which is Satan.
Mm-hmm. Total corruption.
Wow.
Even ask him to move away from your family, your relatives.
Yeah.
Your household, all your societal beliefs, your economic schemes, everything, yeah.
Right.
But they would have used their money there, and you would have walked away. There would be no
why
good
would Yahweh, who's so family-oriented, want Abraham and Sarah to walk away from their father and their father's house?
Well, is it not the fathers that corrupt the sons four generations down and more and more and more? And sometimes
right.
eternally?
And who did Abraham want to accept as his father, and what home did Yahweh invite Abraham to enter?
Into Yahweh's home, and Yahweh is the one becomes his father.
All right. So he's saying, you know, do you want to cling to your earthly father and live in his home, or do you want to have me be your father and live in my home? That's
mm-hmm.
your choice. Let's see now. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Even if you love your dad... That's
yeah.
the easiest call in all of humanity. Even if your dad had the nicest home on the block.
Yeah.
The easiest call in the universe right there. All right, so the first thing you did is say walk away from Babel. Walk away from the Bible. Walk mm-hmm. away from the notion of two covenants. Walk away from Babylon. Walk away from religion. Walk away from politics, your country. Walk away from your father's house.
And military, the whole bit. Yeah.
Right.
They're thinking that they're safe because of the military and her.
Right. His second was trust
to come to know, to trust him around.
Right.
And to know and understand what's it.
Right.
You know.
Are you going to need some, are you going to need to be concerned if you want to trust and rely?
Well, you're concerned that you want to know.
Yeah, you better know. You better be concerned enough that you're going to closely examine and carefully consider Yahweh's introduction of himself to us as you come to know him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't come to know him. You've got to know not only his name, but what he wants, what he doesn't want, what he accepts, what he rejects, what he is offering. If you don't know him, there's a 0% chance that you are ever going to engage in a relationship with him or be saved by him.
No, you want to know the plan, don't you?
What?
You want to know how he thinks? We've all changed our perspective, so we've all changed our thinking. In fact, that was what it means to turn. It's not a what do they call it? What do they call it, you know, when you I'm out of Christianity so long I can't remember what it means. But as far as you turn from the direction
right.
you were going into the direction.
Oh, Christians would call it repenting.
Repentance, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that's a Christian concept
yeah.
of repentance.
It's not repent, it's to turn away
right.
from that.
Yeah, metanoia is the Greek word.
Yes.
Bow means to come, but also to turn is a number of Hebrew words that comprise the idea of turning around, going in an entirely a different direction. But yeah, I was pretty clear about this. He says, trust and rely on me. Now, since he just told him to leave Babel, the Bible, and the concept of two covenants and all of these kinds of things, since he just asked him to leave those things, so he said, just like this passage in Hosea, you know, where is your sovereign? Where is your rulers that you had asked for? Now, isn't he essentially saying, listen, since I've asked you to leave those things and to disassociate with them, you no longer trust them, no longer rely on them for your freedom and your protection and your well-being. What Yahweh is saying is choose to trust and rely on me for your well-being. I'm reliable. I'm dependable. I'm offering you a much better deal. And I'm not going to compete with them. So, you know, if you want my deal, this is it. So it's that's the ultimate change, the ultimate decision. You're going to rely on religion and politics and and your military, or are you going to rely on Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
To rely on Yahweh, don't you have to know him?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so trust and rely on Yahweh. Then the next thing he says, okay, now that you know who Yahweh is, you've disassociated from religion, so it's your mind is at least open, you're no longer intoxicated, so your judgment is no longer impaired, you're no longer corrupt, and you're no longer estranged from God in the sense of foul, stinky, smelly, you know, slimy. So you're no longer those things, and you've come to know Yahweh, and you're willing to trust him. Did Yahweh then lay down some guidance that he is the third covenant condition, some guidance? What is that guidance?
At this point, you walk to God, walk to Yahweh, and become perfect, Sadat.
Okay, well, so is there ever in the Torah a place where Yahweh defines a very specific walk from religion and politics to him?
Because we have to engage. He's already been engaging at that point, of course, but to engage in a more physical way, we have a Moed Mikri, the festival feast.
Right. Where is the Moed Mikri first introduced to us?
In the Torah, in this section, really.
In the Torah, right?
And
the Torah, the Moed Mikri are first hinted at as it relates to Abraham, because the doorway to life, Pesach, and it was a whole dress rehearsal of Pesach with his son Yishak on Mount Moriah, where Yahweh provided the sacrificial lamb, which was Yosha. So we have a hint of it there. But where do we find this path from religion and politics to Yahweh's home, the promised land, laid out in enormous detail?
Gosh, well,
how about that book called Names of Shemot, corrupted to the Exodus, where Yahweh and Moshe go into
do it all
religious and political place,
it,
military place on earth, and provide a walk that begins with Pesach, the doorway to life. Is the second day is Matzah, the third day is Bukodim, where they're adopted as family, and finally on Shavua they receive his Torah. Isn't that the Exodus?
Oh yeah.
Isn't that the path? The one path that Yahweh says, I'm going to take you from religion and politics and being slaves to living freely with me in my home in the promised land?
Yeah.
So when Yahweh says, walk to me and become perfect, is it hard to figure out what that path is?
Not at that point. I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, Abraham obviously knew it. And they celebrated the feast, and they killed the fatted lamb and all that sort of thing. But this is living, breathing stuff now with the children of Israel. Yeah.
Right. And then Yahweh goes into great detail to explain all of the specifics regarding Pesach, Matzah, Bukodim, Shavua, in the middle of the book called Invitations, Kara, named the basis of Mikra, Kara, Invitations. He goes through and explains that whole pathway. So the third condition of the covenant is walk to me and be perfect, and Yahweh has explained exactly what how one does it to enter through the doorway of Pesach.
But consider that for a second. He's made you perfect. In his eyes, you can do no wrong. You're perfect. Wow.
Yeah. And just think for a moment about it. Yosha says, as he is headed to Jerusalem, to be the peace Passover lamb and to make the ultimate ransom sacrifice in Sheol for Masa. And he tells Shimon Kefesh that that his statement regarding who he is, that you are the rock upon which I'm going to build, I'm going to establish my Mikra.
My Mikra.
And he is the living embodiment of those Mikra, which he's going to begin fulfilling that very next day, and no one gets it.
And he celebrates Passover right there with him.
Right.
Or he becomes the Passover lamb. I mean, God.
That's the next major event.
Yeah.
And they don't get it. And they change it to a Last Supper. And they change the Passover to communion. Just like they change the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms to Bible. And they change Mikra to church. I mean, how many changes do you have to make before you've changed everything?
You changed
Yahweh's name to the Lord. Yeah, how many changes before what you now have is so changed that it no longer bears any resemblance to what God and what He's offering? So anyway, that is the third condition that God will walk to me and become perfect. You know what the fourth one is?
You should this is the part where you have to actually carefully consider constantly observing Shamar,
right.
the covenant relationship contract, basically.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as, you know, this is our agreement. This is
you walk away from
throughout all
first,
generations, of course.
You come to know Yahweh, second. Third, you participate in the path that He has provided to become immortal and to become perfect and to be adopted into His family. And then He says the next step along the way, the next condition, is to closely examine and carefully consider everything associated with this covenant.
And it's an ongoing thing. And this is what we're doing.
Right.
This is what we do every day. This is what we do
when we go to bed and we're celebrating the covenant. Right.
Exactly. And this is where the insights come from. This is where we grow.
Right.
How can you grow without it?
Is it possible to closely examine and carefully consider, to observe, to shamar the covenant without reading the Torah?
Well, you tell me where you can find it.
Yeah. Where else is the covenant?
If the Torah is dead, you can't
outside of the Torah.
Yeah. It's not. And all the witness writings. Listen, all the witness writings, all this New Testament. You can't find it.
Can't find it. And did Yahweh bury the instructions and the terms and conditions of His covenant in some place where it'd be hard to find, or where you wouldn't get to what He was offering until you had waded through 1,000 pages of minutia? Or do you put it right there in your face in the first book of His Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Oh, yes. In Genesis, like I probably told you, Genesis and Matthew and Revelations and the Prophets and Psalms were my favorite things of all. I mean, Genesis just has it all.
Right. I mean, Genesis begins with introducing who God is, you know, why He created the universe, how He created the universe, and it goes directly from there into God's ideal of perfection. So God is explaining to you that I created man to have a relationship we can camp on together, enjoy, and have a good time in a perfect realm. And what we talked about the other day is in that perfect realm that He created in Eden, was there a church?
Never.
So there's no church in Yah's version of paradise. Is there a mosque?
For what purpose would you have one?
Right. Yes.
If there was a mosque, what would you do with it?
Was there a synagogue in paradise?
No.
No. Was there a seat of justice in paradise?
No.
A court? No courts. Were there
no
any
court?
Policemen?
No.
In paradise? Was there a military? No. So in Yah's version of paradise, of perfection, of camping out. So in God's idea of the ultimate situation, there was no military. There was no court system. There was no government. There was no town hall. There was no capital building. There was no church. There was no synagogue. There was no mosque. Were there any
No
preachers?
Money. No money, preachers? No preachers.
No money, no preachers.
No nuns, no bishops.
Wow. So God's idea of perfection, of paradise, is the exclusion of all of those things.
That should be frightening to somebody.
That should be, shouldn't it? And that's what John was taking us to. That's the millennial Shabbat, the thousand-year celebration of camping out with Yahweh. This Sukkah Shabbat, which will begin in year 6000 Yah, 2033 in our calendars, on the day of Sukkah. We're going to be taken right back to a time without mosques, without churches, without synagogues, without any religious entity of any kind, without governments, without militaries, without police, without judges and justice systems. All of it's going to be gone. Yeah, that ought to be frightening if you think your church is providing a service. Your church does not exist in Yah's heaven. All right, so that's
I do remember that when I first read Yah, and you wrote that when people, if a Christian loves all these things, you know, you're not going to find it in heaven. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, everything a Christian thinks of, and I thought of as a Christian, it ain't there. You ain't going to find it there. And that, what a revelation that would be if you could sneak in and look in for a minute. You'd say, where is all the stuff? It ain't there.
Yeah. That's, none of it's there. Yeah, it's paradise is the exclusion of all those things. You know, one of the things we're going to find as we continue to pursue Yahshua 28 is that Yahweh specifically says that he is going to wash all those things away.
Mm-hmm.
He is. He says, I'm going to, everything that's associated with Ephraim, says, I'm going to wash away. That's the only way you can get the whole earth back to the condition of Eden, is to wash away all traces of human civilization, of governments, of militaries, of economic schemes, of religion. It's all gone. All of man's false teaching. By the way, was there a school in Eden?
No.
But was there teaching in Eden?
There was a teacher. He came every day in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're not told a lot about what they did in Eden, but we are told about one specific experience. We're only really told about where Yahweh said, you know, you can. I'm giving you some guidance here. You can eat anything you want to eat. Just don't eat there. But everything else is good for you. So he was giving us some guidance. But the one real experience that we have where Yahweh says, I'm going to give you a glimpse into life in Eden. Isn't Yahweh having all of the animals that he has created parade before Adam, and he and Adam are examining them and considering them and talking about them and naming them? Isn't Yahweh saying that I want to explore and celebrate and share life with you?
Yeah, I mean, didn't you spend an awful lot of time with your first son?
Yeah.
Now you probably had one right close out to them.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you only had one son, I mean, or you had lots of them and spread them out, you spend an awful lot of time. You start sharing everything.
Let me just give you a great example. I have a son in Cincinnati, and I have a son in Waco, Texas. And I have an airplane. And one of the very first things I did with an airplane is I flew my son in Cincinnati down to Waco, Texas, so that the three of us could spend a weekend together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the first thing we did was to go to a cooking class together. My sons love to cook. They just think that the whole idea of cooking is they're really expert chefs. And so I like to. I'm very fond on the nourishing aspects of family. So it resonates with me. But you know what we did all the next day? We went to the zoo.
Ate it.
We went to the zoo.
The zoo. Yeah.
We went to the zoo. The three of us spent 4 hours at the zoo, and we had a grand time. What's any difference between Yahweh parading the animals by, other than he actually created them?
Put them together.
Yeah, he actually created them. Yeah, so he said, that's pretty cool. But But that was quite a thing to do with my sons is we went to the zoo and we had a grand time. We just had the best time laughing and kidding and sharing at the zoo. Isn't that the example that Yahweh says, this is my idea of having fun? What do you think we're going to be doing there for in eternity?
Much of the same, only on a grander scale.
Yeah. Don't you think that Yahweh is going to be sharing the life that he created with us?
Of course.
You ever painted something you were really proud of, Kirk?
Occasionally.
Yeah. And when you painted something you were really proud of, what was the first thing you wanted to do with it?
Well, everything, if you do it well, you want to share it. You paint for other people. You don't really paint for yourself. The joy of doing it is fine, but you paint it for other people.
Right. And if somebody else did you show it to, like, let's say you made a really pretty painting and you showed it to Terry. And Terry says, you know, that's really neat. You are really good. And you talk about it, and she notices some of the nuances in it. How does it make you feel?
Oh, wonderful. You feel like you've done something worthwhile, sure.
Right. And do you enjoy the painting more now that you've shared it?
Oh, sure.
So how's that different than Yahweh?
It's not.
The depiction in the Garden of Eden. All right, so we've gone through the four conditions, and all we have to do to understand the terms and conditions of the Torah is read the Torah, because he starts with creation, he goes immediately to Eden, and didn't you and I go through the flood and determine that every aspect of the flood story explained the terms and conditions of the covenant?
Mm-hmm. That was quite extraordinary. That was a biggie. Gosh, we've covered
it was the very first thing that Noah had to do. So you don't have to look very hard to find the terms and conditions of the covenant. The very first thing that Noah had to do was disassociate from the religious and corrupt political
world that he lived in.
Violent nature of the world around him. The first thing he had to do, he and his family had to disassociate from them. Wasn't that the first?
Mm-hmm.
And once they did that, wasn't it then that they came to know Yahweh? And then they decided, you know, rather than trusting them for my security, I'm going to trust Yahweh. We're just going to trust him.
Yeah.
And then didn't the next thing that was this coming. Let's come to a means that we can come to you and become perfect, because weren't there two groups of animals that, you know, it was the 2x2, all the animals, but there was a second group of animals, weren't there?
Uh-huh, that was a larger number for the feast, yeah.
Right, so they were preparing those animals for the mikre, which is how we walk to God and become perfect, isn't it? So we have it right there that's why there was a second group of animals. And then did they listen to Yahweh's instructions?
They did indeed, otherwise the boat would not be there.
Right, all Yahweh did is provide instructions. Did Yahweh build the boat?
No.
So whoever was there,
they have to engage to be part of it.
So was salvation a free gift of Yahweh?
No, it was a fun gift.
No, it was a, the gift was in the instructions.
The gift,
was the gift in the instructions? So isn't the gift that Yahweh gave to us in the instructions?
It's the Torah, absolutely. It's a great
book
gift.
The book called Instructions. That's the gift. And so did Noah and his sons pay attention to, did they closely examine and carefully consider the instructions that Yahweh gave them regarding the dimensions and the nature of this boat, how to create glue lambs, for example,
mm-hmm.
how to have one doorway.
Yeah, that's quite a boat.
You don't put a doorway in the side of one doorway. In this boat. Did they listen to Yahweh, closely examine and carefully consider what he had to say and act and engage based on his instructions, or did they say, some of that stuff, I think I've got a better idea.
No,
I don't think I'm going to do that part. I'm not going to put in the pitch to seal these timbers because that stuff's yucky. So, no, I'm not going to do that part. I'm going to eliminate that part, but I'm going to add another deck.
No, it was instructions, followed the instructions verbatim.
So, which means they listened to them, they closely examined, they carefully considered them, and then they acted upon them. Yeah. And when they entered that, the Ark of the Covenant, and they, they closed that door, they were indeed cut off from the rest of the world, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. They were, yeah.
Circumcised, man, from the rest mm-hmm. of the world. So you have in the story of Noah the means to salvation. And by the way, salvation there was the epitome of the Noah covenant story. Salvation, or was the epitome of the Noah story, a family set apart unto Yahweh, that listened to Yahweh's instructions, that trusted in Yahweh, that set themselves apart from the rest of humanity, and that flourished as a result as a family, lived a very long time, and is part of Yahweh's family.
Mm-hmm. And the clue there is the fact that it was called an ark, enlightenment.
The light's free will. The ark is
Aaron.
Based upon
Aaron.
Aaron. Yeah, Aaron. Enlightened free will. Yeah.
I mean,
here we have that story. And then what is the next story about after Noah?
Well, then we go to Abraham.
Huh, right there. And the first thing that Yahweh asks of Abraham, walk away from Babel.
You're from her. Yeah, walk away from
Babel. Walk away from this notion of two covenants. Walk away from this book called the Bible. Walk away from the confusion of religion. Walk away from the whore of Babylon. And walk with me. Come to trust and rely on me, and I will take you to a path that will perfect you. Your inheritance is going to be that you'll be adopted into my family and enriched and empowered, perfected, made immortal. And so he took them on that journey, celebrating even Pesach with him on
mm-hmm.
Moriah.
Yes.
Exactly 40 Yobel before he returned for that sacrificial lamb on that very spot to do exactly as he had promised. Pretty amazing story when you think about it. So what is the fifth condition of the covenant?
Well, you want to raise your children. You want to circumcise the males
right.
accordingly so that all the males will, so that they will remember.
Yeah. If you had you're married, you have a son.
Mm-hmm.
Does your wife get to participate in that decision of the circumcision of your son?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, she
so when a woman says, so men are circumcised, what about women? And is the instruction to parents, circumcise your sons on the eighth day?
Mm-hmm. Very significant there.
And who plays the major role in caring for an infant?
The mother's always there.
Yeah. Can you breastfeed?
The nurturer, no.
No.
Life is from them, yeah.
Right. Right. And so it's a mother's responsibility to see to it that her sons are circumcised,
right.
Yeah, so that they can grow up to be part of Yahweh's family. You know, so those are the terms and conditions of the covenant. But likewise, for those who do not know it, and it never hurts to repeat them, the seven steps that we walk to Yahweh, what's the doorway?
The Passover door, the upright pole that where the blood is spread on the doorway, the doorpost.
All right, the doorway to life.
Doorway to life.
So, yeah.
One door.
Pesach, a doorway to life. And the and Yosha, of course, was a living fulfillment of that. He became the sacrificial lamb. And the second step along the way?
And, of course, is matzah.
All right.
And matzah is to remove the yeast. I mean, you
right.
cannot walk through the door. You cannot be part of the family.
Corrupted
with all your baggage. And corrupted, yeah.
Right. And Yosha explained that the yeast was religious and political corruption.
Mm-hmm. Metaphor, huh?
Yeah, uh-huh. And so... So once you're immortal,
mm-hmm.
being in God's presence, you're not immortal, you're going to be incinerated.
Well,
you can't be in God's presence unless you're perfect. So once you're immortal and perfect, what can God do would be the single best thing that he could do for you?
He can make you part of his family. He can adopt you.
That's exactly right.
Bakurim.
That's what happens in Bakurim. In fact, Bakurim is from Bakar, which means firstborn child. And the plural is firstborn children. It's children born into the first and most important family is what Bakurim means. And that's the third step along the way. Those are happen in three successive days. And Yosef fulfilled all of those, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Enabled all of them. And then what happens 49 7-7s after Bukurim?
Where you become enlightened and enriched.
Right. Shabbat, which is the promise of the Shabbat.
Seven, right.
Right. So that's the fourth step along the way. And between those four steps, all the benefits of the covenant are afforded to us.
Yeah. Now, what other deal could you find?
Yeah, that's better than that. And by the way, are these parties where you are, these events where something is asked of you that you have to make a sacrifice?
You have to respond to the invitation, but that's...
Is that a sacrifice? If somebody invites you to a party and say, God, what a terrible sacrifice, I have to come to this party. Yahweh asks you to bring a gift?
No.
Does he ask you to pay part of the cost to throw in the party?
No.
Does he ask you to perform at the party?
No.
So he sends you an invitation, and he's providing all of the provisions. So where's the sacrifice?
There is no sacrifice.
Yeah, you're being invited to hang out and have a festival feast, a party with God, and he's asking nothing of you other than you show up, not dragging religion and politics with you. Just show up.
You ain't going to get to the door that way. So it's
right. Yeah, I'm prepared to have a good time. And once you're part of this family, what are you naturally inclined to want to do?
Enjoy the party.
Enjoy the party and share with others how wonderful the party is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what true is all about, isn't it?
Right. Uh-huh.
And once you know the truth and you find out what Babel is really all about, don't you want to warn people?
You do. You're going to be met with opposition. You're going to be met with a lot of things, but you certainly want to. But the inclination is, let me tell you what I've learned.
Yeah, and that's what Teruah is all about, trumpeting out this message. And then that, of course, leads to the second of three Moed Mikre that have yet to be fulfilled. This will be fulfilled in your 6,000 Yah. On the day of reconciliations, when Yahweh reconciles himself with his church,
he messed again.
When Yahweh is reconciling Yisrael and Yehudah, and reconciling his relationship with them, reaffirming his covenant, and this time integrating his Torah inside of the very fabric of our lives and our nature. That's the day of reconciliation, which leads to returning to
Sukkah.
Can't be out with God for all time. That's the path.
Yeah.
Six steps that lead to the final destination. Every step along the way, we're the beneficiaries.
No one can invent that story.
There is no better offer. I don't know how you would do. I don't know how you would improve it. I will just say it cannot be improved upon.
No, it cannot.
It is in our advantage all the way. That's why when Yahweh hears somebody saying, no, I want to replace it with a new covenant. I want to replace it with the gospel of grace. I want to replace it with a God that dies and is resurrected, that's killed by man. He says, no, that's the plague of death. Don't go there. I've given you a plan that is perfect. Don't change it. Don't take anything away from it. Don't add anything to it. Come to know me. Come to understand what I'm offering and act upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't change it. Who are you to change it?
You know, even where he says to Shemar, he didn't ask you to be a genius about it. He asked you just to learn.
Right.
Level of graduation, you know. I don't have to matriculate through this period and hit that mark. All I have to do is...
I do think that Yahweh wants you to be in. Make the connections
to grow.
To understand. Yeah, he wants us to be in so that you make the connections grow. And clearly he wants us to Yada know. As long as we give a genuine effort to Shamar, we're going to come to Yada know, And consideration of what we're observing is going to lead to being understanding. It's making connections.
Well, let me ask you now. You've done a tremendous amount of research. You published the books. You've done the radio shows. And you could say, well, and you've shared. But look how much you've grown because of people like Roy and William.
That's exactly what I was thinking about. Who was the person that presented King Saul as a prototype for Shaul?
Beats me.
Yeah, I think it's Kirk. And who was the one who found the reference to Saul in Yasha Yad? You know who that was?
Well, I consider more as a group effort. We talk about things.
It was William in the elevator ramp, our good friend William.
Oh yeah.
And who was the one that found the reference to Shaul in Hosea?
Yeah, that was Roy.
Right. And who was the one that found the definition of why Yahweh used Ephraim in the book of Hosea, where he cited the passage of that Ephraim was in league with the Lord Baal, and he did wrong, and therefore he is dead. Who found that passage for us? Made that connection?
I'm not sure.
That was Larry.
It's all merging to me in my mind. So,
yeah, that was Larry.
Forgive me for not giving people credit, but
yeah, that was Larry.
Larry, was it?
Yeah. And the person that did a comprehensive analysis of circumstances, so there would be absolutely no question whatsoever what circumcision means, because that was the most divisive issue amongst Pauline Christians in the covenant, was James. We've reached the point where we're all contributing to one another. Everybody's making a contribution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you look at our good friend Richard and the site that he has, and how many people are coming to know Yahweh because of the site that he's put together. Look how many people around the world are finding the site of our favorite former Marine. Well, Frank's site too, but Don's site. Yeah. QRA-YHWH. It's a collective effort. We're all part of the family. We're all working together, and there's not a bit of it that's a burden. All of it is fun. Hanging around with the teacher. Well, Kirk, I'm going to we're still recording, but we're past the broadcast period. You and I have had a long day.
Indeed, we have. It's been an enjoyable day, though.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the things that we learned today, because why not emphasize them? They are so profound. It's worth doing. We're hopeful that Larry and JB
get well quick.
They're
very much missed.
Yeah, and having shattered my shoulder, I know the pain that's associated with that. I was chasing after one of my customers late one night as he wanted to show off his new four-wheeler in a neighborhood where they were just putting in the streets and had just cut in the concrete curbs, but I had holes next to the curb, which I couldn't see as I was running at night, and I fell on a curb on my shoulder. A concrete curb on my shoulder because of a misstep into a pit. And I know what it's like to do that sort of thing. So although I didn't get the 14 breaks.
No, that's quite awesome.
So we wish them quick healing.
Indeed.
Yeah, thank you. Thank Terry for allowing you to the family for this longer period of time. It was fun day.
I enjoyed it very much. Okay.
Yeah, really.
I'll throw my favorite. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, on Monday, Scott's out camping with family, and so I think Monday is going to be.
Oh, that's right. Monday you're not going to be there.
Yeah, because Scott's off, and it's just much easier for Scott if we just do an archive. And you know what, I don't mind taking a day off. So Monday is going to be an archive.
Take the whole day.
take the whole day because Scott's out camping with
Daddy, I think he said.
Yeah, with really the whole family, extended family, and the extended family.
All right. I appreciate you.
Enjoy my friend.
See you later.
Okay. Good night.
Bye, Kurt.